It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. While schools are out, we are inviting learners of all ages to join us every Tuesday to learn about wildlife and wilderness. And every Thursday, we'll be talking about different periods in Iowa history. Be sure to check out our website, iowapublicradio.org, for related pictures, vocabulary words, discussion questions related to each show. And now, today's teacher is in the house, virtually, of course, socially distant, wildlife biologist Jim Pease. Is here. He is Emeritus Associate Professor of Natural Resource Ecology and Management at Iowa State University, and today he's going to introduce us to mammals that live underground. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Charity. How are you this morning?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being here today.
And my pleasure.
We
it's
suddenly
great fun.
Yeah, and suddenly we have some real spring weather. We have sunshine. We have more temperatures, and this is the kind of thing that brings animals out from underground, isn't it?
That's right. And in fact, I'm expecting in the next day or two to see probably at least two of the underground critters we're going to talk about today that are emerging from hibernation. And as they emerge, we'll see them on roadsides and perhaps in your backyard, those sorts of areas that they will emerge, and we'll see them looking around and looking a little bit thinner than they did last fall.
Well, let's talk about hibernation, because I think that that's a word that we use a lot, but we may not fully understand what it means. What does it actually mean to hibernate?
Well, it means that it's actually relatively few animals that hibernate, that truly hibernate. And that includes the three first that we're going to talk about, the 13-legged ground squirrel, the Franklin's ground squirrel, and the woodchuck. They are true hibernators. They go below ground, below the frost line, that's really important, and their body temperature, they curl up into a tight ball, and their body temperature lowers almost to the same temperature, or very close to freezing. So it's basically the same temperature as the ground around them. So if they hibernate above frost line, they would literally freeze to death. So they go, they dig a burrow that is below frost line. Their breathing rate slows down from a couple hundred breaths per minute down to one breath every 5 minutes.
Wow.
That's really, really slow. Their heartbeat slows down from 300 beats a minute to something in the range of 3 to 10 beats a minute. So it is really, really slow. In non-hibernating animals, if your heart rate slowed down, you'd have cardiac arrest. You would die of a heart attack. But they have special ways of dealing with that. And so true hibernators slow down their body temperature or their heart rate and their breathing rate down to very, very tiny percentage of what they are when they're active. And their body temperature goes down to near freezing. So it's a really deep state. If you could reach them, you could actually pick them up. They wouldn't wake up. Loud noises, anything like that wouldn't wake them up at all.
Right. And for comparison, you could ask a grown-up in your house to help you count your heartbeats per minute right now, and you
right.
can compare, because I guarantee it's a lot more than 3 or 4 heartbeats per minute.
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is.
So
yeah,
you talked about these animals coming out
60
looking
to 70 beats per
right,
minute is probably
right.
what most people
and that's
are,
if you're so, sitting
right.
still.
So right.
a lot of these animals coming out of hibernation, you mentioned they're going to look thinner. So even though they're sleeping or in this hibernation, which is beyond sleeping, their bodies are still using up nutrients, right?
Yeah, they are. And they're using what's called fat metabolism, which is actually the key to some of the diets people go on. They try to metabolize fat rather than carbohydrates, sugars and that. So they fatten up in the fall of the year, and they go into hibernation, and they live literally off those fat reserves. Their body is able to metabolize, to change those fat reserves into enough energy to keep them alive through the winter months, through the hibernation period. And it's quite amazing.
And tell me about some of the true hibernators that live in Iowa. I think when we think about hibernation, a lot of us, the first thing we think about are bears. And if you want to learn about hibernation, I encourage you to find out how bears hibernate, because it is fascinating, especially since the females are pregnant when they're hibernating. Right. So that's pretty incredible. But tell me about some of our true hibernators.
Well, the three true hibernators we have here, as I mentioned earlier, are basically all ground squirrels. And yes, a woodchuck is a ground squirrel, believe it or not.
It's just a really big ground squirrel.
So they're one of the ones that I expect to see sometime in the next couple of days, or at least evidence of them emerging. Woodchucks are a large ground squirrel. They're in the range of 7 to 10 pounds, although somewhat less than that as they emerge from hibernation. And they're about 24 to maybe 25, 20 to 25 inches long, basically, and including a little short tail. And they, as you can see, if you look on the website, you can see a picture of one actually up in a bush or a shrub, a small tree, in a wooded area. These are primarily critters of the prairies, but woodchucks are the exception. They live sort of on the edge of the prairie. They'll get out into open grasslands, but they do go into woodlands as well, especially to hibernate through the winter. But they all these ground squirrels, these three ground squirrels, are actually primarily herbivores, meaning that they eat plants, lots and lots of plants. But they will break that diet occasionally if they come across insects or worms, or even ground nesting birds, nestlings and eggs. They'll eat that as well. So they're not strictly herbivores. They do go into the carnivore range occasionally with insects and some small birds.
Well, and Jim. I look at this picture of a woodchuck, and I think to myself, wow, that looks a lot like a groundhog.
That's exactly right. You might also say he looks like a whistle pig. And those are all common names for the same animal. In fact, there are lots of common names. Some of them are not very nice, in fact, for a number of these big ground squirrels. And woodchucks have a reputation because they dig tunnels, and they dig, and they're a fairly large animal, being a 8 to 7 to 10 pound animal. They'll dig a tunnel that is maybe 6 to 8 inches in diameter. It's round like they are, and sometimes if they dig underneath a building or that, it may affect the foundation or. But I think people often exaggerate the amount of damage that can be done. But certainly if they're digging in your yard and you have a small yard, an 8-inch tunnel through your yard can be pretty significant. And these tunnels are commonly 10 to 15 feet long, and they might have branches off to the side, because a woodchuck den is often a den that has more than one entrance. They want to be able to escape if something comes in there after them. So they often have an obvious entrance that you see, and you can watch them emerge from sometimes if you're careful and quiet. Then they'll have one or two other entrances that are more hidden, and those are escaped hatches for them. They can go out the back door, if you will.
Without having to talk to the visitors. Now, you mentioned they're woodchucks, they're groundhogs, and some people call them whistle pigs. Why are they called whistle pigs?
Well, the female, when she's out, the young are born naked and blind, and just like many mammals, they have to feed them, and as they get older, they will emerge from the burrow with the female, and they'll be out grazing in a grassy area, and she will, if she senses danger, for example, if you are out there watching them or something, and she sees you, She'll give this sharp whistle. I wouldn't describe it as more like a human whistle, but it's a sharp bark, actually. And it calls the young. It says to the young, "You better get home right now, buddy." So they come running. If they're smart, they come running and they dive into the burrow with her. And so that's where the whistle pig comes from. There are lots of variations on the pig theme that that they will use to describe them. So, but because they're kind of squat, close to the ground, short-legged, but very powerful diggers, but they some people call them piggish. And so the whistle pig comes from that sharp whistle that the female gives.
What time of day are they usually active?
They're diurnal, which means another vocabulary word, which means they're out in the daytime primarily. Although around people, they have to adjust that because they view people as predators, and certainly we are. They adjust that when people are around. In wild areas, they'll be out during the day almost exclusively, but around people, they'll adjust that a little bit, so it'll be really early morning before people are out and about, and late in the evening. They like to be out during the day if they possibly can.
And what you mentioned, people are predators, and of course we are. What are their other primary predators?
Well, any large mammal, coyotes can certainly take them. Bobcats could take little ones, young ones. And if we had, we don't have a good population of mountain lions or cougars in the state, but when they're here, they'll certainly, in their native habitat, out on the prairies, they would certainly be a prime predator as well. And hawks, very large hawks, like red tails, could take the young ones.
All right.
And
Jim,
an adult might be taken occasionally by an eagle.
Okay, so. We've got a short break coming up. We'll be back in just a moment. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here today. We're talking about mammals that live underground. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we're learning about underground mammals. Many of them emerge this time of year as things warm up. With us, wildlife biologist Jim Pease. He is Emeritus Associate Professor of Natural Resource Ecology and Management at Iowa State University. And we would love to hear from you. If you have questions or if you have observations that you'd like to share, give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And of course, a lot of kids are out of school right now. If you are home from school and you are listening to this show, we would love to hear from you. We know that you don't like to make phone calls and you don't like to send emails, but please make an exception just for us. You dial that number. It's 1-866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're dealing with obsolete technology as far as our young listeners go, Jim, but that's how we do it here. So we're going to keep
on.
So we've been talking about the woodchuck, and we've also been throwing out the fact that we're talking about mammals. And remind us just quickly, again, for people who might have forgotten, what makes an animal a mammal?
A mammal is has hair and it has mammary glands. It feeds its young milk through the mammaries, and so a mammal is any hairy animal that feeds its young milk, basically. So that's what defines them. One of the others that I'm waiting for, and I'm hoping to see one maybe later today, and it would be interesting to hear from people in other parts of the state, maybe farther south in the state. I'm in central Iowa, you're in eastern Iowa. Farther south, they may have these emerged already, but one is the 13-line ground squirrel, and there's a great photo of one on the website, and they have alternating lines of dotted lines, little light dotted lines, and look to be solid lines on their back. And there are actually 13 rows, and that's where they get their name, 13-line ground squirrel. This is another of the ground squirrels that's a true hibernator. emerges from the ground, and you'll often see them standing upright. And depending on where you are in the state or where your parents are from or grandparents, you may call them all kinds of other things. They're called streaked gophers, picket posts, liners, a Minnesota gopher. They're not a gopher, but they're a ground squirrel. Squinny, grinny, liner, all kinds of. I counted at one point in my career, I counted in the state of Iowa over 21 different common names for them, some of which can't be repeated in public, but there are a lot of common names for this critter around the state.
Well, and we have
a true hibernator.
This question from Elise, she says, I wonder if the word squinny is only a Midwest term. When I moved to California and said the word, people looked at me like I just said tarlet instead of toilet. So that's pretty unique to us, right?
It could be. I haven't looked at, I should talk to friends on either coast and see what they call them. But it's quite possibly a Midwestern term. As I say, within the state of Iowa, there are 21 different common names. I'm sure as you go westward or eastward, there'd be even more. So yeah, it's definitely a common name. That's why there are official names for mammals, and we use scientific names for them because there are so many different common names. People may not know what you're talking about. If you say gopher, that's an entirely different animal, but you may be thinking of this 13-lined ground squirrel.
All right. And you say 13 lines, and if I try to count them on the photo that we've posted, which is a beautiful photo, I could probably get to 13, but mostly we just have to take your word for it because they move so fast.
Yeah, they do. They run on the ground with their tails down, and they run really, really fast and dive into a burrow. Like other ground squirrels, including the woodchuck and the Franklin's ground squirrel, we'll talk about in a second here, they have open tunnel systems, except during the winter when they hibernate, where they go way down below frost line, 3 or 4 feet down. They'll often seal that tunnel a little bit. And that's why it takes a long time for them to come out of hibernation, even though the ground has had most of the frost out of the ground now for at least a couple of weeks here in central Iowa. They won't emerge until it's really warmed up a little bit below ground, and they can detect that, it seems, and come to the surface. So I'm expecting them any day now.
Now, you mentioned a lot of people call them bad names. I happen to be very fond of these little creatures, but as you know, I'm pretty fond of all living creatures. So why do humans have such a hard time living with these little guys?
I think it's because they make holes. And we have a sort of a Northern European view of what a perfect lawn should be, and it shouldn't have any holes in it. And so people get upset when they dig a hole in their lawn. Actually, it's a pretty innocuous thing to me to have a hole in the lawn. It just means I've got some other critters around. It's a healthy lawn. But not everybody looks at them that way. And I think it's just the holes that they object to. Now, this guy, I must say, if you were here 175 years ago, when this was still tall grass prairie, there would be very few of the 13-lined ground squirrel in Iowa. Today, with lawns, mowed lawns and cemeteries and some roadsides get mowed any of the short grass areas, this is the most common ground squirrel in the state because basically we have short grasses now. They're short because we mow them. Cemeteries, golf courses, everything, they're everywhere. But 175 years ago, when this was tall grass prairie, this critter was here in some areas, but really very uncommon. It was much more common out to the west of us in the short grass prairies. The ground squirrel that was most common here was the Franklin's ground squirrel. And there's a picture of them. They don't have on the website. They don't have lines. They're sort of a uniform brown. They're about 3 inches longer than the taller, if you will, than the 13-line ground squirrel. And but they have open tunnel systems. That was the most common ground squirrel in the state of Iowa when it was all tall grass prairie. They have virtually disappeared from the state. There are very few left. And if you see one, certainly report it to your local county conservation board or to me, because we'd love to hear about where you are seeing them. There are a few places. I've seen just a few in the state in my career here. And but they're very difficult to see and very shy.
Now, I very rarely see I don't see the Franklin's ground squirrel, unfortunately, but with the 13-lined ground squirrel, I never see baby ground squirrels. And I would really like to, because I think they're probably incredibly cute. But do they pretty much keep their young underground until they're mature?
Yeah, pretty much underground until they are fledged at 5 or 6 weeks of age and will come above ground. And by that time, it's hard to tell the difference because they're nearly adult size, not entirely. They're a little bit smaller, but nearly adult size. But they'll look like the adults. They still have the lines of dotted lines and solid lines down their back. So they look very much like their parents.
And we haven't talked about predators. Pretty much everybody will eat a ground squirrel, as far
tell. Yeah, they are food for all sorts of things, from everything from weasels and mink to coyotes and foxes and everything in between. They really are lots and lots of hawks and owls will take them. Not owls so much, because these owls tend to be nocturnal, meaning coming out at night, whereas all these ground squirrels, these street ground squirrels, are all diurnal, coming out in the daytime.
We know that rabbits deal with the fact that everybody wants to eat rabbits by having lots of young and multiple litters per year. How about ground squirrels? How do they deal with being so low on the food chain?
Yeah, it's. I think that's the advantage of being underground. You're not quite as easy a prey item. So they have one litter a year, and that litter is, as far as I've been able to find in any of the scientific literature, is really only one litter. There may be occasional one that might try a second litter, but it's pretty rare. So being underground is their protection, and diving for those holes is a very important skill. Being fast and being well camouflaged is really important. If you're out there in the daytime grazing on the dandelions and whatever else the short grass will offer, you better be close to that hole and be fast to get to it.
Now, these are the true hibernators on your list today, the woodchucks, the 13-line ground squirrel, and Franklin's ground squirrel. I want to ask this question before we move on to some of these other underground creatures that don't quite hibernate. But Mary in Des Moines sent this question. She said, "We met a river otter on a trail along the Des Moines River last Sunday afternoon. We've never seen one so close. He ran away, but we started to wonder, where is the otter in winter?"
The otters are actually active in the water, sometimes under the ice. They can fish through the under the ice in the wintertime, and especially on our rivers and streams that are mostly open these days. Otters do very, very well in streams and rivers, and can hole up in their bank dens quite easily during the daytime or during downtime, but they come out and fish in the open water. So they're active all through the winter. So good question.
All right. So if the next group of animals that we're going to talk about are not true hibernators, but we still don't see them during the winter, what are they doing?
They're often doing what's called, they're either underground or they are underground, but they are in. They wake up from what's called torpor. Torpor is sort of a temporary state, similar to hibernation in the fact that their breathing rate slows down and their heart rate slows down, but it doesn't go way down to, and even their body temperature will go lower, but it doesn't go down to the levels that true hibernators have. And so torpor, T-O-R-P-O-R, is a little bit different than hibernation. It's sort of like a really, really deep sleep. But it doesn't last as long either. For example, another underground dweller is the eastern chipmunk. And they're often confused with the 13-line ground squirrels. But chipmunks tend to be more woodland or woodland edge than the 13-line ground squirrel is. And they only have a single white stripe on each side of their body. When they run, they also run with their tail up, whereas ground squirrels run with their tails down. And they'll tend to hop like a squirrel does more than the ground squirrels do. They're also good tree climbers. So they'll often, in the during the growing season, chipmunks will take some of their food underground in their underground burrows and store it in sort of chipmunk pantries, if you will. But they'll also then sometimes have tree cavities, if they can keep other critters out of it, and will store some food up in there. And that might be nuts and seeds of grasses, bird feed from your bird feeders, pieces of corn, kernels of corn, whatever they can find, they'll store it in these underground or in a hollow in a tree, these pantries. And while they'll go into torpor and maybe sleep for a day or two or three, especially during really, really harsh winter weather, they'll wake up and go to the pantry and get a snack, if you will. So they don't have to live off those fat reserves. While they do fatten up and they do help them through the winter, they don't live off those fat reserves. They can still eat through the winter. You'll even see a chipmunk on mild days in January or February. You'll see them out and about, maybe in your lawn or your yard, hunting for the odd berry or a bit of seed that's fallen out of your bird feeder. So they're active through the winter. But they're often confused as ground squirrels, but they're really not a true ground squirrel and not true hibernators.
Does that make them more vulnerable to long, cold winters because they have to store all the food that they're going to need?
I don't know that. I would say that very cold winters tend to have a greater effect on the ground squirrels than it does on chipmunks. Chipmunks, certainly a long winter can be tough on them, but because they have storage areas, I think it's a little easier on them. If the frost line, for example, goes below where a hibernating ground squirrel may be, they will freeze to death, and so we'll have fewer of them that come out of hibernation in the spring than but with chipmunks, because they're only in torpor and they have access to other food supplies, I think it's probably easier on them than it is on true hibernators.
All right. Well, let's talk. We're going to have to take a break in about a minute, but let's talk a little bit about pocket gophers.
This is one that very few people ever see, but you see evidence of them everywhere. If you drive down any, basically any country road in Iowa, and even some roads in cities, you'll see it actually emerging as soon as the frost was out of the ground. You'll see these mounds of dirt, maybe 8 or 10 inches high, in the road ditches, very, very commonly. And that's a telltale sign that there are pocket gophers around. Pocket gophers are a great, very common, one of Iowa's most common mammals that is seldom seen.
All right. And we know, and we not only have a picture of a pocket gopher, but we have a picture of a pocket gopher mound as well, which is very distinctive because it looks like a pile of dirt on the ground. But that's a good sign that there may just be a pocket gopher there. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about Iowa's underground mammals. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions and your observations. Particularly, we're hoping to hear from some of our younger listeners today. If you've ever seen one of these creatures, give us a call and tell us about what you've observed. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are learning about underground mammals, some of the mammals that emerge in springtime. Some of them hibernate. Some of them spend the winter in a state of torpor where they wake up every once in a while and eat something. And of course, we'd love to hear from you this hour if you have questions or observations. 866-780-9100. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Wildlife biologist Jim Pease. And we also encourage you to go to iowapublicradio.org, click on Talk of Iowa, and you can see our latest web post because we've got pictures of each one of these creatures that we are talking about today. We were talking about pocket gophers. They are common. They are hard to see, of course, for people my age. So you might want to ask your parents about this. In the 1980s, the pocket gopher was immortalized in the film Caddyshack, which has some adult themes. So, you know, be forewarned. But that's probably the most famous gopher of all time was the gopher that the comedian Bill Murray was trying to take care of on a golf course. But don't worry, he didn't succeed. Right. All right. So pocket gophers are everywhere, you said. And Candace in Davenport.
Really are.
All right. She has a question about that. Hi, Candace.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I actually have two. So my first question is, I live in a cul-de-sac in an urban area of Davenport, Iowa, and for 2 years, our neighborhood has been plagued by something that's making tunnels and then making little mounds of dirt. And my neighbors would like to do away with it, and I'm encouraging everyone not to. So first of all, I want to know, is it more likely that we have a pocket gopher or a woodchuck? And either way, is there a humane way for me to trap it, get rid of it, so that it wouldn't come back?
Okay. I think you don't have a woodchuck. A woodchuck is big enough that they don't, you'll see the entrance. It's a round entrance, and it might be 8 inches in diameter to their tunnel system. And their tunnel system isn't on the surface. What you're probably seeing are raised tunnels in the turf. Is that correct? In
yes.
your lawn?
Mm-hmm. And in my neighbor's lawn.
Okay. Yeah, and you can't. It's hard to find the opening. If you stick your finger down through one of those tunnels, your finger it's just under the surface of the grass, and so you'll actually go into the tunnel and you can feel the opening to that tunnel. And it's probably another critter that we're going to talk about in a few minutes here is probably the eastern mole. Their mounds of dirt are basically sort of pushed up from below, so it's like a little
yes.
volcano. If you look yep. On the website at the pocket gopher mound, it's more of a fan shape of dirt, and it actually has a plug because pocket gophers will occasionally come up onto the run across the lawn and will then plug that opening when they go back into the tunnel. So it's very, very different than a mole mound, although it just from the distance it looks just like a mound of dirt. They both look similar. But they really are very different tunnel systems. The moles are tunneling just under the surface in search of earthworms. About 95% of a mole's diet is are earthworms. They'll also eat some grubs and that, but basically they're earthworms. And if you have a healthy lawn, you're very likely to have earthworms in it, and the main mole food is main mole meal is earthworms. So it you could maybe get rid of the earthworms, but you wouldn't have a very healthy lawn then either. They're especially active at this time of year. We've noticed in the last several days, boy, there are mold tunnels all over the place in our yards, in our woods, across the trails, everywhere, because the earthworms are active now, and so are the moles. As it gets drier, earthworms go deeper, and so do the moles. So you won't see them as much in the middle of the summer as you do in the spring and the fall. But it is probably moles, and moles are very different critters. It's very difficult to live trap them, or you might be able to do it. I would go on, if you look on the ISU Extension store, you can download a publication on moles there, and it talks about how to get rid of them. It's very difficult to live trap, though, I will tell you that.
All right. Well, Candace, thank you so much for your call. But let's talk more about moles, because they're certainly the weirdest creature that we're talking about today.
Yeah.
And we, again, have a beautiful picture on our website. This is from the Missouri Department of Conservation, a mole up close and personal, which is hard to do.
Right.
You don't see them, at least not living that often.
Right. Yeah, they. In fact, I wonder if this one was actually a pose, if you will. but you can see they have these incredible front paws, and like most of these underground mammals of Iowa, they have large front feet. They're shaped in a certain way and made for digging. Pocket gophers, moles, ground squirrels, badgers—they all have these incredible front claws. But with moles in particular, because they literally swim through the soil, those front feet look more like shovels, and they're short-legged, and boy, they can just plow right through that ground. And it is amazing to watch them in a tunnel. Now, it's difficult to watch them because you have to stand absolutely still.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you do that, Jim?
Every step that you take, they feel that, and they will stop or go deeper real quickly because they know that something is above them. So you have to just sit there very, very quietly and lightly so that you're not you don't get sensed by the mole. They're extremely sensitive. You notice in this picture that they have they do have eyes, but they are so tiny and so useless because they spend about 99.9% of their life underground. Eyes are not really useful. They can detect some difference in light and darkness, but not much more than that. That nose is the most important feature on the front of their head, because that is able to smell worms and grubs, but especially worms in front of them, and then they gobble them up. So they're really a very fierce predator. They will eat dozens of worms every day, and grubs and other things that they might find underground, but almost exclusively carnivorous, as opposed to some of the other members that we've been talking about, the ground squirrels and chipmunks, that are mostly herbivorous, eating plants. Moles are mainly insectivorous, if you will, or wormiferous. what would that be? Whatever, they eat worms.
I think that's the perfect
the other
way.
The other one that's interesting that eats from underground is pocket gopher. We didn't finish talking about it. The pocket gopher eats roots. The roots of big plants, and in fact, they're so important on the tall grass prairie. There's been some really interesting research that shows us that the moles are probably one of the prime creatures that was responsible for the variety of plants, the terrific variety of plants, the diversity of plants that's found on the tall grass prairie, because they would eat the large roots of plants that might come to dominate from underground. I actually watched a parsnip disappear as a mole or as a pocket gopher pulled it underground, eating the root. And they opened up the pockets in the prairie with their mounds, as well as the eating of the roots of the dominant species of plants, and left room then for other species to come in. So really an important source of the diversity of plants on the tall grass prairie. And those guys will come up on top of the ground. All of these critters are pretty solitary, except for during the breeding season. You know, they'll always prefer to be pretty much alone. There will be family groups out in the pocket gophers, but these underground tunnel systems, they'll often kick out the kids just as soon as they can.
All right,
go find your own tunnel.
make it for yourself. You've got to be a self-starter.
Right.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Danielle is on the line in Des Moines, and she has anticipated the final creature that you want to talk about today. Hi, Danielle.
Hi.
Hi. What's your
question? I was wondering about badgers, because I never seem to hear about them or see them. And is that something that is native to Iowa or was more around when there were prairies and such? And I can take my call off here. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Danielle. And that is a great question.
It's a great question because the badger, in fact, is a prime predator on all of the previous critters we've talked about. They eat ground squirrels, including woodchucks. They'll eat pocket gophers. They'll eat chipmunks. They'll eat moles. Anything else that digs, they are a prime predator on. A badger is a member of the Mustela, the weasel family, but this is a weasel that makes his living by digging up and eating critters underground. They're short and squat. Many people mistake them for a woodchuck. But they're sort of a lighter color generally than woodchucks are. Woodchucks tend to be sort of a darker brown. These guys are sort of a grizzled gray and light brown. Like other diggers, they have huge front claws. The front claws can be up to 2 inches long, in fact, on the front of them. So they're really made for digging. But because they're so low and squat to the ground, their burrow shape is different. And that's one of the ways you can tell whether it's a woodchuck burrow, which is a round 6 to 8 inch wide burrow. A badger burrow is like it's been squashed. So it's sort of egg shaped, lying down. So it's wider than it is high. And if you want to be sure, you take your head and get real close so you can see the shape of the burrow. And if you hear a low growl, get your head out of there.
Okay? Do not try that at home. Now, I mean, badgers are native to Iowa,
but we don't
see them very often, and they are far less common than they used to be. What kind of habitat do they prefer that we don't seem to have as much of anymore?
Prairie. They're really a critter of open country. Now, they've adapted a little bit, and that has allowed them to come back. They used to be trapped and hunted very, very heavily for that fur, the winter fur. They have these long guard hairs, and they used to make trap them, and they would, it's quite beautiful fur. But they would those long guard hairs were actually used both for primarily for brushes, not only fine paint brushes, but also shaving brushes. If you can find in your grandpa's cupboard someplace an old shaving brush, you take a look at that, and if it's actually a natural bristle, it's probably made from the long guard hairs of badgers. So they used to be hunted and trapped quite extensively. It's much less so today, and I think they're making a comeback. I have actually seen them on golf courses where they're actually solving a problem. While they're making bigger holes, they're solving a problem that the golf course felt they had because they've moved in where other ground squirrels, the 13-lane ground squirrels primarily, have a lot of holes. And the badgers are simply cleaning that up. They're moving in and eating all the 13-line ground squirrels, and they'll move on. So they leave behind some new divots, I would say.
Significant divots.
On the golf course.
So they're around more than they were, say, when I was growing up, but it's really rare for one of us to see a badger. Why are they so hard to see?
Well, like their relatives as underground mammals, people are a primary predator. And so while ground squirrels, for example, are primarily diurnal, coming out in the daytime, badgers, in order to find them, to see them, they have to be diurnal as well. But once they start digging underground, they use that powerful front legs to dig them out. But I think it's just they stay away from people whenever they can. They view people as a threat, and they have been. And so it's pretty simple to see why they would hide from us. They were much more common in the tallgrass prairies. This is really a western critter from basically the Mississippi westward, clear up into Canada and down into Mexico. We see the range of the badger. They're not an eastern U.S. Species, but as people moved west, they discovered these, and they were killed very heavily in
like
the
1800s
and
so
early
many
1900s,
of the species so. that were native right. to these areas. The only place I've ever seen a badger in the wild is in the Badlands in South Dakota. I saw a pair
sure.
of badgers that were hunting in a prairie dog area.
Oh, yeah.
So I saw them around sunset. When are badgers most active?
Whenever they can be. So, they will be active anytime, day or night. And because, as like I say, they're digging, they don't have to have daylight, but they like to see an active prairie dog town. So they like to see or ground squirrels. They want to see them. And because those are diurnal critters, then they will hunt in the daytime. But once they start digging, it doesn't matter if it's day or night. They'll be out there. They really have an important role to play because their burrows actually serve as burrows for other critters as well. In fact, one of their out on the short grass prairies to our west in the mid and short grass prairies in the Dakotas and Kansas and Nebraska. You'll see them often, and they're known as the prime predator of rattlesnakes.
Oh.
Because rattlesnakes in those areas go down into underground burrows, and the badgers will dig down into those burrows, and they're really a fast and important predator.
Right, an
incredible
community service. All right,
you bet.
Jim, we are out of time, but we will be back again next Tuesday to talk about some above ground mammals that you might see this time of year. Be sure to check out our website, iowapublicradio.org. And Jim Pease, thank you.
Thank you.
This is Talk About.